Welcome to the Actual Fluency Podcast. Each week you'll find inspirational, motivational interviews with some of the world's best language learners, industry experts, all trying to help you to learn foreign languages better, faster, and more efficiently. And here we go. If you're looking for a language teacher to enhance your language learning, then I highly recommend italki. Italki is the world's biggest tutoring platform, and you can find thousands of teachers and tutors at very reasonable prices. Get a free lesson after completing your first lesson by going to languageteacher.co. Hello everyone, welcome back to the Actual Fluency Podcast. Today I'm joined by my friend Maria Dobrovolska, who is running the website Deutsch mit Maria, that also has a really big YouTube channel with, I think it's over 17 million views, so quite a serious channel there with 150,000 plus subscribers, and it's all in German. It's all for people who want to learn German, as the name implies. Today's episode, we're talking about her language learning past, including growing up as a native Russian speaker in Latvia, some of the political things that are happening there that was completely unknown to me. Maybe you'll find that interesting as well. And we also talked about how she started teaching German when after she moved to Germany and lived there for a while and pivoted into just becoming a full-time German teacher and now has her own business and it's seeing tremendous growth. So I'm really excited to have her on. She's also a fantastic human being. So enjoy the episode with Maria and I'll see you in the next one. Well, Maria, welcome to the podcast. It's been a while. We've been talking about it for a while, but we finally made it happen. And do you want to start the recording off by just letting people know who you are, where you're from, and how you got the interest in languages?
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Chris. It's a huge honor for me. I've been following your podcast forever, and I'm really honored. So I'm Maria, obviously, and originally I'm from Riga, from Latvia. But I've been living in Germany, in Bavaria, for the past, I guess it's almost 14 years now. So I'm not sure, which country is more mine now. And speaking of languages, so Russian is my mother tongue and Latvian was my first foreign language. And then I added German and English and some other languages, which I never really followed through to, you know, to become really fluent. But in times of need, I could probably speak some sentences in them. Yeah,
fantastic. Actually, it's interesting. This is a complete coincidence, but the other day, I got an email from someone saying that I should feature the linguistic challenges of Latvia a bit more. So maybe you can explain to the listeners. I mean, I know a little bit about it, but I'm sure a lot of people haven't. I don't know. What is the language percentages between Russian and Latvian, and how much do you learn of the other language in school?
Okay, well, this is a quite complicated story because, you know, we have this Soviet past. So basically, Russian used to be the main language for many, many years. And then we became independent in 91, I think. And, well, after that, Latvian became more dominant. So it is the main language now. It's an official language. But there are still many people whose mother tongue is Russian. And, I guess it's different now than it used to be like 20 years ago, because now there is no pressure to learn Russian anymore. So young people choose other languages to learn at school, for example. They don't have to learn Russian anymore. And there are many Latvians who are not interested in Russian. On the other hand, you have people who have Russian as their mother tongue and they refuse to learn Latvian because, well, it's a kind of a political thing. So that's why it's a little complicated. But, you know, I grew up in a bilingual family and I have Russian friends and Latvian friends, but it's something that is really tough. When you live in Latvia, you always have to choose the right language. So if you address a person in the street and ask them for directions and you choose the wrong language, you might get a rude answer, you might not get an answer at all, which is, you know, psychologically, it's not a nice thing to experience every day.
No, so how do you know? Do you just guess? Or are there certain areas that are more likely to be one or the other? Or how do you know?
I guess mostly you look at the person and you know, but sometimes you don't, and then you pick the wrong language, and it's like, okay. Even if you speak both, you know, I studied at the university in Latvian, but I did my A-levels in Russian, so I went to a Russian school, so I spoke both. But even if you just happen to pick the wrong language, it might, you know, lead to a weird situation.
Yeah, but it's very integrated then. So is it like it's like Canada or how would, if, because, you know, a lot of people never been to Latvia, so they probably have no idea how that looks like. Would if you go into a restaurant, for instance, would the menu be in both languages, or would there be like the Russian restaurant, then the Latvian restaurant? Can you share a little bit about how that is?
Well, I guess the public language is Latvian everywhere. So if you'll find a menu in English, German, and whatever other languages for the tourists, and the rest will be all Latvian. So the street names used to be in two languages, and then in 91 they painted over the Russian part and left the Latvian part in the street names, which was really weird. Because we're like, well, if you grow up in a bilingual country, you get used to it. You know both languages, so you use both languages all the time. And then at some point, one of the languages was like cut out.
Yeah.
So in any official situation, in any if you're dealing with authorities or something, it's only Latvian. But there are many people who speak Russian, and it's, well, I know it used to be 30-something%. But it's really hard to measure now because there are many Russians with Latvian passports and it says Latvian. So with nationality is Latvian, but they don't say which language people speak. So in the passport, you can't really see it.
Yeah. I mean, it's such an interesting topic. I know we could probably talk about this a long time. I don't want to keep lingering on it. But for me, it's just really interesting because it's natural with the past, obviously the Soviet Union, the fall of the Soviet Union, that you would kind of distance yourself. But at the same time, you have a big part of the population whose main language, whose native language is Russian, and who identify with it. And, you know, language is essentially a culture. So at that point, I mean, it must have been quite rough for people who had Russian language back then as the main language, because you're kind of, it's like you're being, I don't know, it's kind of like your culture is taken away if all the signs are painted over and the schools are, you know, it's being down prioritized. And I even heard recently there was being some, the government wanted to make it illegal or something. That was even, sounded even crazier. I don't know if that was a rumor or what happened, but I mean, that must just have been a really strange feeling.
Well, you know, I was told to someone years ago that I should go home. I should go to my home country. And I said, sorry, I was born here.
Wow.
Where am I supposed to go? Yeah, but you speak Russian. So if you want to stay here, you should speak Latvian. And this is something you hear a lot. If, you know, you're walking down the street talking to a friend in Russian, and then you might be addressed in a really unfriendly way, and someone might told you, like, go home. Even if you may be a tourist from Moscow and you never had a chance to learn Latvian. So this is the part which makes it hard. But on the other hand, you know, it gave me this start with two languages.
Yeah.
So I grew up with two languages, and my mom added Latvian maybe when I was like 4 or 5, because I learned how to read when I was 4 in Russian. And I'm still not sure how that happened, but I guess I loved it so much that everyone was reading aloud to me. And then they stopped at some point, and I was like, wait, I still want to read. So they said, so you learn it. Yeah, so I learned how to read. So I was really reading a lot when I was a kid. And then my mom added Latvian as my second language. So I basically grew up with two. And I guess it's the advantage of the country, because you have so many countries where there's just one language, which is official. So you don't get this start with two.
Definitely. But I just imagine like Canada. Just imagine walking down in Montreal or Quebec City or something, speaking French and or the other way around, speaking English, and somebody saying, you know, go home. And it's like, but it's such a big part of the culture. It's a bilingual community. I hope the situation calms down and like gives people some. I don't know how to solve it even, because obviously that's deeply ingrained due to the history. Of course, there's probably a lot of oppression and like a lot of brutal times. So I can understand if some people are negative about it, but obviously the racism is completely unbearable, especially since you're from there. You know, it's 30%, as you said. That's the number I heard before. But anyway, let's move on to some more cheerful topics. But thank you for indulging my curiosity in the topic for a few minutes. I appreciate it. You're definitely right that where you brought up and your parents and everything can be a huge boost to bilingualism. Like in Denmark, for instance, the official language is Danish. There's no other language, but because it's such a small language, English is a huge part of it. So for me, I also feel super lucky to have gotten that start as well from a very young age, where we had to translate video games for ourselves because there was no Danish Pokemon, you know, didn't exist back then. Or whatever.
Definitely a niche, you know, on the market, Danish Pokemon.
Yeah, I think it's getting more popular now to actually translate the games, which I don't like. Back then, it was only the kids' games that were translated. But now it might be more popular. I don't know. I don't play those games anymore. But it just goes to show that if you're in a country like England or America, you really have a whole different perspective, because people just assume, well, you know, English, you'll do fine. Everyone speaks English, right? So you don't get that bilingual advantage. You don't get that introduction to the fact that there are actually other languages out there early on. So I really enjoy that you just mentioned that as well as a big advantage, even though for many Russian speakers in Latvia, I'm sure it's quite a grim experience, or they have had bad experiences with it.
Well, you know, I guess it's going to change maybe after, you know, several generations only. But when young people will start seeing Russian just as another foreign language, which is really attractive to learn, because there are so many things you can do with it. There are so many countries you can go to, and there are so many great jobs where you can use Russian. Then it will be reborn again, let's say. So without this negative touch of, oh, you know, we were forced to speak Russian for like 75 years as a nation, and that's why we hate it. But things don't change overnight, so maybe some generations will pass and then things will change. So I'm absolutely hopeful. And well, yeah,
I think so too. The further you get away from those times, then yeah, the better it will be. And I also think, yeah, I'm with you on that, definitely. I don't think it's going away either. That's not the impression I got from following it just a little bit. Like, it's not about, you know, they're not driving all the Russian speakers out of the country. And I mean, the numbers might be falling, but it's still there, a big part of the culture, a big part of the community.
Oh, let's say many people drove themselves out of the country because of that, because as soon as Latvia joined the European Union, we got the chance to live abroad and to work abroad and to study abroad. So it was a new chance for many people who never felt really at home there. Mm. So it's a matter of politics. I mean, if you want everyone between 18, well, the age of 18 and 40 to leave the country and work abroad, okay, so keep doing what you're doing. So
yeah,
anything that is done has consequences. And well, there are reasons why I don't live in Riga anymore. I mean, I love the country. I love the people, and my family is there. But there are reasons why I've been in Germany for so many years now.
Of course. What made you move to Bavaria or Germany in general, I guess? What made you choose Germany?
Well, you know, every good story starts with a love story.
Yeah, we have lots of those on the podcast. Definitely.
So basically, the official story is that I decided to participate in this Erasmus exchange program because we just joined the EU and nobody knew really what this means, you know, to go for a year or something, to go to another country and to study there. And exchange students were like, well, it was new, at least in Latvia, it was new. So the head of our department was like, come on, you speak German already. So you go and try it out like for the others. So basically what I did, this is the official part of the story, the unofficial part of the story, just for your listeners, you know, just don't tell anyone else. It was like I went to a conference and there were people from different countries and I met a really nice German guy. So basically I decided, I guess it was a decision of 2 or 3 days that I have to go to Germany no matter what for. So I found a university in Bavaria, which was quite close to the city he lived in. So I was there. The love story didn't really work out, which is not a tragedy because I ended up staying in Germany. I was like, okay, so the love story didn't work out. What do I do now? Do I admit that I went to Germany just for this? Or if I don't admit it, then I have to do something else. Okay, so I moved to the university I was at in Nuremberg. So I switched the programs. I finished my university program in Nuremberg and did all the final exams. So not just as an exchange student, but as a regular student. And so I didn't have to say anymore, I came to Germany because I fell in love. Well, yeah. And later on, I got married anyway, and I had a kid here, and I still have a kid here. So basically, I'm bound to a city I came to by accident.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, that's a lot of people, definitely, as you pointed out, have that story, and it's a great one. Lots of questions there, though. So your German wasn't good when you moved, but...
It was.
Okay, sorry.
So
okay.
there was one more step I left out because I went to Germany for the first time when I was 11 because my mom got a chance to participate in a program like to... It was an institute for Waldorf pedagogics, if you've ever heard of it. I mean, most people know Montessori as alternative school, well, kind of school. And there's also Waldorf schools. So she decided to get the certificate as a Waldorf teacher. So she got into a program and she went to Mannheim for a year and she was allowed to take me with her. So basically, I came to Mannheim without speaking any German. So I was like, I could say, mein Name ist Maria, ich komme aus Lettland. And that was it. And it took me, I guess, 2 or 3 months to start speaking because I was really lucky to be at a school where I was the only foreign kid in class. So I was really interesting to the rest of the class. And I was really lucky because I could imagine a situation where kids would be mocking me or, you know, bullying me because I couldn't speak. So I was like, I don't know, mute. But they were really helping me. They were correcting every mistake I made. But I mean, every single one. So if I was like in math and I wanted to say something like, yes, I know the answer too. Until I got the sentence right in my head, it was too late anyway. Mm. And then 5 people said, Maria, it's not like, ich habe denselben gedacht. You should say, ich habe dasselbe gedacht. And funnily enough, my self-esteem wasn't murdered in that year. So it was really interesting. But instead, I learned how to speak German, probably like any German kid, within a few months. So it was like a miracle.
Amazing.
Yeah, well, at the age of 11, it's a little different than if you do it as an adult. But I came back to Latvia with a different kind of self-esteem, I have to admit, because I was like, okay, now I speak German. So, and since then, basically, I can speak German like I do now.
Yeah, and your German is amazing. Let me just put that out there. I know you're a humble person, so you probably won't admit it, but it is as fluent as you can become. You won't get any better than this. That's for sure.
Thank you, thank you. Well, I enjoyed very much, and I probably find that it's my second mother tongue, if you can have something like that. I mean, it's not one of my two languages I grew up with, but I feel like it's mine. You know, that's why I teach it, and that's why I would never teach Russian, because about Russian, I couldn't tell you how exactly I learned it. It's my real
Right.
tongue. So I make all the mistakes mother native speakers make, but with German, I do remember how I learned it, and I still think it's a miracle that I did learn it the way I did, but I can teach it better, I think, because I remember this process. I remember me not speaking German.
Yeah, you're old enough to kind of see everything in context of another language, but you're still young enough that you kind of soak everything up.
Yeah.
That's my theory anyway. I don't know if that's actually what happened because I've never heard anyone before who had that experience actually. Like I've heard it for people who are, a couple of years old maybe, or I've never heard anyone who are, let's say, 10 plus, who's been dumped into somewhere where they don't speak the language and then a couple of months later actually able to speak the language. So yeah, that is a miracle, definitely. It's really cool as well that you had that opportunity to, so it was just all in German, and
Yeah, yeah.
you just kind of put in there. Would that even happen today, I wonder? Because it sounds like a kind of a an old school way of doing it. Just put the kid in the school. I think maybe there'd be like international school these days that would be in other languages. I don't know.
Well, the funny thing is, a year before we went to Germany, my mom made me switch schools, and I got into a German. How do you call it? It was not a German school, but it is a German profiled school, like where they have a lot of German classes and they have teachers from Germany, but the main language was Russian. But well, they did have a lot of German classes and stuff. And during this year, I didn't learn anything. I mean, I came
Right.
to Germany and I had a feeling that I'm a zero. I know nothing like Jon Snow, you know? And then later on, I was trying to reflect on that and to think, how is it possible to, have classes in a foreign language for a year and not remember anything? So this is experience I really used a lot when I started teaching, because I thought, okay, it's impossible. The other kids were also kids, and if you could create a situation where they are in a kind of German environment, which is possible using whatever audios, videos. I mean, it was not 1970s then, it was
Right.
1990s. So they also have lots of, they had lots of technical stuff they could have used, but they obviously didn't, because I don't think I was not talented in languages until some point. And then I went to Germany and boom, so I
Yeah.
wasted a year. And for my self-esteem, it was terrible, because those kids were learning German from the first grade, and I switched schools in fifth grade. So basically, my mom thought, okay, those 5 years you can catch up easily. And I didn't. And besides, I had a really tough year because I was bullied all the time. So I was, I was a kid from an intelligent family where books were something very precious, and I came into a class of kids mostly of wealthy parents, so many business people, and the kids were like, okay, how many Barbies have you got? I was like, none. And well, how many other fancy stuff do you have? Well, I don't really. So I was the girl with the books, and I was either invisible or they were mocking me just for fun. So I was like, I hated German altogether because it was connected with the school and the situation. And then when I got to Germany, it was like I had a fresh start. Nobody knew me. Nobody knew that I was this unpopular kid with books and not really fancy clothes. So when I came back from Germany, it was, I can't even describe it for what it was, because I had to repeat a grade, because they told me that what I did in Germany was really nice, but it was a private school. So it was a Waldorf school, actually. And well, it doesn't really fit with the school program in my old school. So they sent me back to sixth grade after Germany. So basically, I lost a year, but I won so many things I can't even begin to describe, because I came back with my new self-esteem. Like, I was cool. I was in a German school where I spoke better than most teachers who were teaching German, which was not always good, because, you know, not every teacher is delighted to have a student in class who speaks better than the teacher himself or herself. But the situation in class was completely different. So I was popular. I was, I don't know, I felt differently. And I'm still friends with, I'd say, 80% of my class. So, and we graduated together and we're still connected in every possible social network. So, you know, things happen and you never know what leads to what. But in the end, you look back and think, okay, interesting how it all turned out.
Yeah. I mean, who would have thought back when you were doing that first German experience that you would be teaching it some years later? We'll just take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, iTalki, but we'll be right back. On this podcast, I've interviewed hundreds of language learners, some of the world's greatest polyglots and industry experts. And one thing they all agree on is the value of one-to-one tutoring lessons. And for this, I highly recommend iTalki. They have thousands of teachers in all price ranges, and they even have certified teachers who have taken diplomas or have degrees in the language you're learning. So whether you're just brushing up on your Italian ahead of a trip to Rome, or you want to master Russian to take the exam, or whatever your goals are in languages, iTalki has a tutor suitable for you. And compared to private tutoring offline, it's really affordable. You can find informal tutors down to $5 an hour, and you can have trial lessons for even less. So if you want to master a language from the comfort of your own home, and you even get a $10 credit when you complete your first lesson, go to languageteacher.co and check out iTalki. It might be the best thing you do for your language learning this year. I think the self-esteem thing is a big part of why language learning is kind of failing in school today. And I you know, obviously, hopefully not everyone gets bullied. I mean, I had some of that as well. And a lot of people, unfortunately, it does happen too. I don't think kids are particularly nice, especially not to people who are different or from the outside in any way. But I think the success, I think most people have a negative experience with languages when they start, because it's taught very badly. You know, it's like math. You know, they teach you these grammar tables. You don't really use it for anything. So you never feel like you get anywhere. And I had one of the recent episodes was with Tamara, who was in Berlin as well recently. She was saying how she had Spanish in school for a couple of years, and then she went to a Spanish-speaking country, and she couldn't say anything. So her confidence is just crushed, you know, it completely destroyed. Even though she was doing well at the test, she was doing everything right according to the school, but then actually using it was useless. So you can imagine how that feels. And I think if anything, I would love to see schools focusing more on those early wins, you know, in the smaller grades, try and get them to speak or sing maybe. I mean, my school, we did a lot of singing. And I think that's very nice, because you memorize songs much better with the melody. And also it helps you to be part of the group, because you're all singing the same song, right?
Yes.
Amazing story you have, definitely. I wish I had the same opportunity, but obviously, if you take my story, I've had other opportunities that are very similar in kind of the format, and that's led to different places. So when did you get into the teaching aspect? How did you decide to explore that?
Well, I guess I started teaching when I was 17 or something, because at some point, some parent of some kid at your school asks you, like, oh, you know, could you help out with whatever? So that's why I got into it. And then I had some experience with teaching at several schools in Riga, because it's less strict than, for example, in Germany. If you don't have the certificate, if you haven't been to university, no one will let you near kids at school,
right,
which I don't think is right, but okay. So it doesn't give young people or potential teachers the opportunity to, you know, to take a look at what it's like to teach at school before they actually, you know, went through the whole study thing for, you know, a bazillion of years. And then at last they are allowed to try some teaching. So I had the opportunity to start really early. And I noticed that, well, on the one hand, I enjoyed teaching. On the other hand, I hated teaching anything to kids. And right. It took me many, many years to find out that, well, actually, it's okay. Not everyone has to work with kids, and there are people who are like born for it. You know, you've definitely met teachers in your life where you thought, okay, this is a natural born teacher, and he or she shouldn't be doing anything else because it's just talent. You know, the way they deal with kids, and this is what I didn't have. So I could work, let's say, starting with teenagers. It became easier because I'm very, well, I like using irony in class. I like joking. I like language jokes. And you can't do it with 8-year-olds. It just doesn't work.
Right.
So it was an interesting experience for me because, well, I went through university, and in Germany you have to specialize really, like you have to pick the kind of school you want to be a teacher in. So, and there are many different kinds of school. So, well, you can't just change your mind after a year and say, oh, no, I want to teach older kids or something. So I specialized in Hauptschule, which is the school for kids who didn't really make it. You know, there are basically three types of schools. And there's Gymnasium for those who were successful, who want to go to university and become doctors and engineers and lawyers. There is kind of a middle school, which is Realschule. And there is the other school for the other kids. Well, teachers tell them, you know, but you can still become a hairdresser or a mechanic or something. Mm. It's still fine. But these kids, basically, when they get into the school, they're lost. Like, the teachers tell them every day that you're losers anyway, and you won't get anywhere because you're losers. So this is the kind of school I specialized in when I decided that I want to be a teacher. And it was really tough. So one of the reasons I decided I will never work in a state school, because it puts you in a system where you can't really change anything. I mean, you can do your teaching, but you can't tell 5th graders that they can become doctors if it's their dream. So if there is a class where you're supposed to talk about kids' dream jobs, then there is a variety of jobs which are selected for them, which are, well, realistic for them. But you can't say, of course you can become a doctor if you want badly, if wow. You try everything. And it was so depressing and that I decided I can't do it. It doesn't matter what I teach. It doesn't matter how good I am at teaching. But every day I'm like walking around killing those kids' dreams. Or if I don't, then my colleagues do. And it was just too depressing.
That's awful. That's really awful. I hope that doesn't happen too much, but sadly, it probably does on many levels, even if it's not as clearly defined as in Germany. It probably happens everywhere that the kids who underperform at school, they're probably kind of put down in a way, not killed, of course, but, you know, their dreams are kind of shattered. And and they're just constantly told what they can't do instead of the fact that they can do it.
Mm.
And I don't know. I think, again, it's back to confidence, isn't it? Because if you really want to do something, you can. Everyone can learn anything. Of course, we're not all made to be, let's say, NBA players or, you know, top level chess players or whatever. But most jobs that you mentioned can definitely be made by anyone. Like, you just need some extra help. But if you are told from you're 12 years old that you're useless and stupid, it maybe not even directly, just kind of passively, then you can see how people get out of school and they just kind of fold, you know, they just kind of break down almost. So I'm happy you got out of that.
Oh, but I guess my takeaway from this whole story, which, well, it took me years and years until I understood what I really don't want to do. What I do now is basically the same, but in a different way. So I teach adults mostly. So on my YouTube channel, I suppose most of the viewers are adult. But they are motivated. They are there because they want to learn. Mm-hmm. So if you compare it to state schools where, as a teacher, you have to be, I don't know, a clown or a dinosaur to motivate your students, because, well, it's not about the stuff you have to teach them. It's how to get their attention, because they are in school and they are in, well, their natural state of mind is, oh, get lost. I don't want to hear that. It's not interesting. It's school, so it can't be interesting. You know, this general school situation. Probably it's different in Scandinavia, as we keep hearing those legends about how everything is different in Scandinavian schools. But, well, German schools are very, very traditional. So now I not only deal with people who really came there, who were looking for videos on the German language, and they found me, and they are thankful for everything I do, which for a teacher, it's really awesome, because I don't have to motivate anyone. They come there because they want to. Mm. On the other hand is, I have many online courses now. Well, I have run an online language school for German. And what we mostly do is helping people preparing for exams. And I hate exams myself. I don't believe in language certificates. I think it's a crazy thing, well, people are forced to do. But okay, it's a system we all function in, so it doesn't work without the system. And what I basically do is, on the one hand, I teach them how to pass exams, how to, you know, pick the right materials, what to learn, how to learn, why to learn, etc. And on the one hand, we work on the self-esteem very intensively, because people come to Germany because they want to, well, maybe some of them want to study at the university. They're normally very motivated, and they have their dreams, and they imagine how their life in Germany will turn out. There, I don't need too much motivation yet. But there are others who are doctors and lawyers and engineers, and who came to Germany, and back in their home country, they used to be somebody. You know, they had a career. I really have many doctors in my courses, and they say, okay, I used to be head of whatever, heart surgery, and I came to Germany, and Job Center, this, how do you call it in language, in any other language?
Yeah, like, the Job Center, yeah, that's what they call it here in the UK, at least.
Okay, so anyway, the institution responsible for employment, and they tell you, well, your diploma is not nothing, is worth nothing here. So you could work in a supermarket, you know, and they mean it. I mean, it's not a joke or something. They just don't see the person as whole. They look at the certificates and the diplomas and whatever. And especially if people are not from European Union, their diplomas are worth nothing.
Yeah.
So until they go back to school and they study the language, and the point is, in all the language courses which are offered by state institutions, no one cares about the people's self-esteem. So the people go there and they have to start from zero. No one cares what who they used to be. They feel like they're nothing. You know, no one needs them until they have reached, you know, C1 level. But I mean, it takes time. And if the course is not really well structured, if the teacher is not motivated, try to reach C1 level. If the, you know, this situation is not really helping. So this is what I basically do. And I think anything we can do with grammar or vocabulary is worth less than the motivational part, where I say, look back at everything you have achieved in life and don't look at yourself as you're a blank sheet of paper. I mean, you have your experience and you've passed exams and you've learned things. So this is all your asset, you know, you can use it. And they're like, oh, really? Now that you've told me? Well, actually, I've done quite a lot in my life. And this is what is so important, because you have basically, you don't do much language teaching. You do something else. I don't know. It's maybe more psychological than it is language teaching at all. Well, my experience.
Yeah. In the last recording I did, we put a percentage on what actually, no, it might be a few recordings ago, but we put a percentage of what it takes to learn a language. And we were both saying it's probably around 80 to 90% motivation or interest and 10% studying. Because you need that motivation so much to actually do anything. And it goes back to the confidence, but it also goes to putting in the actual work. As we all know, it takes time and work to improve your languages, which can be hard if you have absolutely zero motivation, or like you say, you went to the job offices and they just put you down, basically. But just to mention, the YouTube channel and your website is called Deutsch mit Maria. Yep. Or Maria. I'm not entirely sure. My German accent is a little bit all over the place. I don't know which one you would say.
The name is not German, but I just say Maria.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
In Latvian, they would emphasize it differently. In Latvian, it would be Maria, but I don't use it because I'm not Latvian and I don't live in Latvia anymore. So,
of course. Well, I just took a look at the stats before we started here, and the numbers on YouTube are pretty good. If you ask me, like, you have 150,000 plus subscribers, you've got 17 million views. That's a lot of zeros.
And yes.
You've made 581 videos. So what kind of content do you make, and how do you figure out what to do next in terms of the videos and also the content on your website? And I think it's all in German, right? You don't do any like other languages too?
No, it's just German.
Yeah.
I decided that I have to focus on some point, so I did that with German. Well, when I started the YouTube channel, the reason basically why I did it was my boss at the language school where I was working, so a language school for adults, she kept telling me that I can't be using Rammstein songs in class. It's just not cool. You know, people want to get prepared for their exams. They want to study grammar. They don't want Rammstein. And I said, look, if you trust me, I'm supposed to do listening comprehension with them. Why not Rammstein? I mean, the songs are awesome. I mean, you have to pick the right songs, because otherwise they are a little shocking. But, well, and we had more and more conversations like this when she was like, oh, this is too creative, and please don't do that, and please don't do this. And I was thinking,
too creative.
Yeah, really, I heard that a lot. And I was really thinking, well, maybe I'm doing something wrong. Maybe I don't really fit in, which was a really great thought, because I thought maybe I just have to, you know, find a different platform. So I just randomly recorded a couple of videos to see how it goes. But in the beginning, which was really funny, I decided I'll make videos about general language learning, because I didn't consider myself a polyglot, but I thought, okay, I speak several languages, and some of them I learned as a native tongue, and others I learned. So I can give some advice on how to learn languages. And I made several videos, and somehow somebody commented like, oh, this is quite nice, but could you explain Konjunktiv 2? And I was like, oh, and my videos were intended for German native speakers, so not for foreigners.
Right.
And the comment was like, yeah, good, but explain Konjunktiv 2, like conditionals in German. And I was like, but why me? And then I browsed on YouTube and I found multiple videos on that. And they said one important thing. They said, yes, there are so many videos, but we like your way of explaining things. So please make a video on Konjunktiv 2. And that was the moment when I recognized you don't have to do something completely new. You have to bring something new to the topic, or you have to, well, you have your own way of explaining things. Or maybe they like your voice, because many people say I have a very calm way of explaining. So maybe they like it because of that. I don't know. So, and then I started just paying attention to the comments, and one by one, I added more and more videos people wanted to see. And then basically it became a channel where I was interacting with my audience very, very much. So I started with YouTube, then I added the Facebook page, but I always was checking on their wishes, like what kind of videos did they want to see. And of course, some things were like, oh, I could do this, I could do that. So some spontaneous ideas of mine, and they went with it. So it was a combination of what do they want and what do I feel like talking about. So this is how basically it changed from general how to learn a language to how to learn German.
Mm. Great. And you only speak German. You don't explain anything in English or any other language.
Sometimes I translate maybe some words, but I notice that if I use all the languages I know, so there are some videos where I translate into German and into English and into Russian and into Latvian and into Romanian. And there's always someone complaining in the comments that I translated into Russian, but I didn't into English, or I translated into English, but I didn't into Romanian. And then I decided like, folks, I can't translate into every existing language, so I just stick with German. Sometimes if there are some difficult things, I explain, or maybe I translate separate words really just in English or maybe in Russian, max. But, well, generally my channel turned out to be for advanced learners, because there was definitely a gap in the market, because there are so many things for A1 and A2 level.
Yeah.
The higher you get, the less you have, like, there are not enough materials on that. So we started with maybe B1, second half of B1, B2, and C1, C2. So that's why I thought, if they can't understand my explanations, then it's not B2, and they should be somewhere else watching other videos. But
yeah.
Well, I also get a lot, like, people tell me that they understand me very well because I speak a very clear German and I really try to speak clearly and slowly. But then they go out in the street and they understand nothing. And I was like, okay, so where do you live if you understand nothing in the street? And he said like, oh, it's a Swiss village. So I said, you know, in a Swiss village, probably I wouldn't understand anything either, because when I came to Nuremberg, I had a feeling that I learned the wrong German, which was a shocking experience for me, because I had to move into the dorms for university students.
Yeah.
And the, how do you call the person who is supervising the dorms? Like
the I don't know, I actually don't know.
Well, you know what I mean. The guy who gives you the key for your room and
right.
Takes away the garbage, or I don't know. So like let's say the manager or something.
Yeah.
And I was actually just supposed to introduce myself and to say that, you know, I need the key to my room and please explain me how everything works here. And he started talking at me and I was like, okay, I thought I'm fluent in German, but he was speaking, I guess it was Oberpfälzisch, or something. So it was some Bavarian dialect, which is really tough to understand, even if you're really fluent in the language. And the funny part is, he didn't care at all. So he was managing the dorms for international students. So there were people from China and Indonesia and Russia, and, well, any language. And they all had the same problem, maybe even more problems than I had, because they weren't as fluent in German as I was. And he just didn't care. So I stayed there for a year, and I was observing him talking to different people. And there was all the same situation where he was talking and talking and talking, and they were like, sorry, could you write it down? Could you just give me the key? So it was really funny.
Yeah, that happens a lot. I saw it at the airport as well. I was flying out of Schönefeld in Berlin, and there was this security guard. There's a lot of people who didn't understand that he was not letting anyone in for the moment because there was too many people on the other side queuing, and they went up to him, and he just started speaking in German. And the girl was saying, like, I don't speak German. What do you mean? And he just continued in German, like, but he spoke louder.
Yeah. Or they try talking to you like to a retarded person, like, very loudly, but with the same words. And my students keep complaining, and they say, you know, I try to make native speakers correct my mistakes, and they just don't. I say, you know, I will tell you a secret. Not every native speaker is a natural teacher. So some people are just annoyed by you not being able to make correct sentences, and they don't care if you use the right articles or not. But if they don't understand what you want to say, they get annoyed, and then they switch to English probably or something else. So, but this naive belief that every native speaker is your best friend in terms of learning a language is unfortunately not true, at least in my experience.
Right. No, and the Swiss German is just impossible. I lived with a Swiss exchange student in Denmark for a while, and even though my German is quite good and I understand most of what people say, I couldn't understand him at all when he was speaking fast. So I think you need to live in that environment for a while before you start to get tuned to it. Maybe similar with the Bavarian, but yeah, Swiss is a very special form of German, I feel like.
Well, some people say it's not German at all.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
The fact that on TV they have German subtitles. Well, I mean, on the news in Swiss German, they have German subtitles.
Right.
So it has to tell us something.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. That's like having it in, if you have a really regional accent in other countries, I guess you can have that as well.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I didn't have this experience with Russian, because Russian, I guess it doesn't have any dialect. So maybe there are some slight differences in pronunciation, but a person from Siberia can understand a person from Moscow or from St. Petersburg without any problems. So right. When I came to Germany and I found out that the person from Hamburg could come to Munich and have problems, you know, understanding other people, it was a surprise to me.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I don't know enough Russian to have heard of any of that. I guess it's a nice and structured language, so they have that going for them. So what's the future hold? Are you planning to just keep growing your YouTube channel, keep growing the website, keep teaching more students? Or do you have any like new things coming up?
Well, as it's a podcast, you can't see my whiteboard behind me. I have like, let's say, 30 projects on it, which are on different levels of being done. So I'm always working on multiple things at the same time. But I'm writing a book, which will be basically what we were talking about all the time. It's how to pass your German exam and get some wings.
Confidence builder.
Yeah. So it will be a mixture of, you know, very practical advice on how to get prepared for an exam, what do you need, what you don't need, plus how to not lose your self-esteem on the way to the exam, and that exams are just exams and the certificate doesn't tell anything about you as a personality. It's just a piece of paper. So this is a balance of these two things. And I'm basically answering a bazillion of questions people ask me on Facebook and on YouTube. So as most things I do, they appear from questions I get. And then if I get a certain question a lot, then I think, okay, maybe I should make an online course where I answer all these questions. So
Yeah. This
is how my online courses appeared, because people kept asking me how to write an essay in German. And they kept asking and kept asking. And then I did many individual coachings. And at some point I thought, okay, basically the problems people have with writing are similar. So why don't I put together a course where I answer maybe 95% of those questions? And if there are some more questions people have, they still can contact me or book a coaching or something. And the courses turned out really well. So they seem to be working.
Fantastic. Well, that's the best, I think, when you have that kind of customer feedback, or even before they become customers, you have that, this is what we want. Then you give them exactly what they want. So that's, you're helping them with the biggest problem.
And yeah. Well, I'm a huge fan of Gary Vaynerchuk, and his book, The Thank You Economy, was probably the book which formed my attitude to the whole business thing from the very beginning. So I learned very early that you can't get too far away from your customers. So you have to be truly interested in them. Otherwise, they will notice that the only thing you're interested in is just selling some bullshit to them they don't really need or want. So you really have to stick close with your audience, no matter how cool you are, how many followers you have. And, you know, so you shouldn't get too far away from them. And this is the most important takeaway I probably had in those 3 years I've been doing it.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Maria, for coming on and sharing your story and experiences being both a learner and a teacher. It's great that you and so many other people on the podcast have made that progression. I think it's a nice natural progression if people are interested in languages to try and look into teaching. If it suits your personality, it's like you said earlier, not everyone is made out to be a teacher. Not everyone likes to be a teacher even. So it's not like we're going to push this as one method suits all, but hopefully the experience that you have and other people will give the listeners some ideas to how maybe they can use their language passion or skills in different ways to build the life they want.
Yes, sure. So thank you so much for having me. And it was really a delight to talk to you. I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, likewise. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Actual Fluency Podcast. I really appreciate having you here today. Just before you leave, I just want to give a quick shout out to today's sponsor, which is italki. Italki is a tutoring platform where you can find affordable tutors for every language in the world, pretty much. So get started today and get a free $10 credit when you book your first lesson if you go to actualfluency.com/italki, and that's spelled italki. So give it a go and feel how tutoring can really boost and enhance your language learning.